Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 18, 2016. An Eritrean businessman murdered in his sleep prompts other businessmen to consider leaving South Sudan.
I speeded and saw four soldiers with guns flashing a torch. I then took a position at a corner, but they recognized I was taking a position. As they tried to track me, the neighbors started blowing whistles, which saved me. They would have killed me too.
And the government and SPLM-IO continue with blame games over the demilitarization of Juba town.
You are going into the crocodile's mouth or going into the lion's den, and you should go raising up your hand. What's that? And you're talking about forces of the two parties. How can you ask one party who is actually the aggrieved to go empty-handed? Is that in the provision?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of businesses run by Eritreans in Wau town are closed today as owners mourn the death of a colleague killed at home in his bed early this morning. Local authorities say preliminary investigations indicate the Eritrean businessman was killed by armed robbers. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Wau.
Dozens of Eritrean women wept as they stood outside the home of slain Eritrean businessman Habte Mariam. Eyewitnesses say Mariam was stabbed to death. They say four unidentified men armed with AK-47 rifles entered a fence where the slain Eritrean was found sleeping. George Jemis, a South Sudanese who was sleeping inside his house in the same compound, describes what happened.
We usually sleep outside because of the heat. I just heard table rattle and I woke up and picked my spear. I speeded and saw four soldiers with guns flashing a torch. I then took a position at a corner, but they recognized I was taking a position. As they tried to track me, the neighbors started blowing whistles, which saved me. They would have killed me too.
Jamie says Mariam died on the spot. He says the assailants did not take any valuable. After they left, neighbors rushed to the compound, but Mariam was already dead. Dr. Edmond Sebit, who conducted a post-mortem on Mariam's body at Wau Teaching Hospital, says the Eritrean businessman died from massive internal bleeding after being stabbed with a knife on the back and head several times. Tesfu Yeman, an Eritrean businessman who knew the victim, describes Mariam's murder as a threat to all of their businesses in Wau. Speaking in Arabic, he says it will prompt some Eritrean businessmen to leave the town.
We are investing money from our country here in South Sudan, but with this situation, it makes us unhappy. God should help us. If not, then we quit, because now there is a lot of killings, then we better go to our country.
Wau Municipal Mayor Akol Ajit says he regrets the killing. He admits that several businessmen have been killed by armed robbers in Wau. Speaking in Arabic, Ajit says skyrocketing commodity prices are causing some people to use their guns to loot.
What is happening in Wau can happen in any town, but we have to work to stop this. I think this could be having a link with the prices in the market. Like now, a malo of dura costs 100 SSP, so they think of looting since they cannot manage the market with the little money they have. The government will ensure civilians' lives are safe from these robbers.
Cole says there have been other attacks on unarmed civilians this week. He says unidentified gunmen killed two people traveling in a vehicle carrying food commodities on Wednesday. Despite such incidents, Ajit is calling on Eritreans in Wau to remain calm and continue with their businesses as the police try to track down their assailants. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
The United Nations Security Council President for the month of March, Ismael Abro Gaspar Martins of Angola, says the ceasefire agreement in South Sudan in Greater Upper Nile is holding, but the ongoing violence in South Sudan continues to cause alarm. In his address to the UN Security Council in New York yesterday, Martin said the council calls upon the government of South Sudan to uphold its responsibility for the protection of civilians. He said the council is particularly alarmed at the credible reports describing armed men in SPLA uniform entering a UN mission in South Sudan protection of civilian site and firing on civilians, an act he says may constitute war crimes. He says the council is calling on the government to investigate and prosecute those responsible for the attack.
The Security Council underscores the pressing need for accountability for violations and abuses of human rights and violations of international humanitarian law in South Sudan, including ongoing violations and abuses that have been reported since the agreement was signed.
Martin also addressed President Salva Kiir's decision to unilaterally create 28 states, calling them inconsistent with the IGAD communique published earlier this year. Still, he says, the council is urging all parties to implement the security arrangement set forth last month, under which President Salva Kiir and First Vice President-designate Riek Machar are to usher in the transitional government of national unity. In the final step, Martin says the council is calling on the government and the opposition to protect civilians and civilians' facilities,
including schools and hospitals, allow people to move freely, and allow, in accordance with the relevant provision of the international law and UN guiding principles of humanitarian assistance, the full, safe, and unhindered humanitarian access to help ensure timely delivery of humanitarian assistance to all those in need.
A particular concern among the Security Council are reports of armed men in SPLA uniform entering protection of civilian sites, firing on civilians. Speaking on behalf of the Security Council, Martin pressured the government to deliver justice to the victims. Martin says the Security Council will review progress on each of the steps by the end of the month and underscore the Council's support for UNMISS and its personnel, along those from contributing countries who protect hundreds of thousands of civilians under the threat of physical violence. He also reaffirmed the Council's unwavering support for the people of South Sudan. Traditional and religious leaders in South Sudan are calling on President Salva Kiir and First Vice President-designate, former rebel leader Riek Machar, to stop delaying and start implementing the peace agreement they signed 7 months ago. The leaders say civilians are still being killed, displaced from their villages, and forced to go hungry because of ongoing violence. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
More than 50 traditional and religious leaders who attended a three-day workshop in Juba say they want to see concrete steps being taken towards implementing the peace agreement. The workshop was sponsored by the United States Agency for International Development to educate leaders on the terms of the deal. At the end of the workshop, last night, Secretary General of the South Sudan Council of Churches, James Oyet, read a statement on behalf of the leaders.
We, the people of Greater Upper Nile Region, are tired and have suffered enough as a result of this senseless war. And we call upon His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit and His First Vice President Dr. Riek Machar to show their concern in the implementation of the peace agreement and expedite the formation of the transitional government of national unity.
Oyet says traditional and religious leaders are asking other countries to come and help South Sudanese who continue to suffer.
We call upon the international community and the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, JMEC, to continue to stand with the people of South Sudan in general, and in particular with the people of Greater Upper Nile, who are suffering displacement, hunger, loss of lives, and destruction of property as a result of the current conflict.
The workshop included women from the Greater Upper Nile region's former states of Jonglei, Unity, and Upper Nile. Lauren Bailey is from the USAID-funded project called the Systems to Uphold the Credibility and Constitutionality of Elections in South Sudan. She says citizens know very little about the content of the peace agreement.
One of the things that we've been hearing in a lot of our work is that citizens know less about the peace agreement than they should to really understand and follow the process. And so the goal is to take chiefs and faith-based leaders who are very well respected in their communities and to engage them on the peace agreement so they can go back and have those same conversations with their constituents and their communities about the agreement.
This was the third workshop of its kind. Similar ones were held in the Greater Bahr El Ghazal and Equatorial regions. Bailey says during the workshop, facilitators explained to traditional and religious leaders several chapters of the agreement, but in particular those on reconciliation, peace and healing. Speaking in Arabic, participant Rita John, who lives at the UN Malakal Protection of Civilians site, says she found the training very useful. Rita says she learned a lot of things that she previously did not know about the peace deal. She says she will explain the agreement to other IDPs in the UN camp in Malakal and to others who do not know anything about the agreement. Another participant, Pastor William Toot, a preacher and a trauma counselor at the UNIDP camp in Bor, says he is now better prepared to preach peace and counsel the IDPs traumatized by the war.
I face a lot of challenges, especially where I am, because I'm a POC with the people who are traumatized, those who lost their husband, especially women, and lost their children. They traumatized. And I try to help them, to counsel them, to have a good life, to forget what happened to them.
The trainees are expected to conduct similar workshops in their communities. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan government has reiterated its earlier decision not to allow containment areas for SPLA-IO, led by first vice president designate and former rebel leader Riek Machar in Greater Equatoria and Upper Nile regions. Information Minister Michael Makui emerged from a Council of Ministers meeting about an hour ago to announce the decision. Disagreement over cantonment areas is one of the contentious issues delaying the implementation of the peace agreement. The government says it treats armed groups in the two regions as separate rebellions. The SPLM-IO says that attitude toward rebel forces in the Greater Equatoria and Upper Nile areas is slowing down the peace process. Makui also says Juba will not be held hostage by the SPLM-IO. He accuses the SPLM in opposition of taking too long to come to Juba to implement the peace deal. Makui says if Machar and his forces do not arrive in Juba soon, the government will go ahead with its programs. Ofondi Ndima Fibel is SPLM-IO appointed Member of Parliament in the National Legislative Assembly. Ndima says the Kiir administration is not serious about implementing the peace agreement, and Ndima blames the international community for letting the government change the goalposts.
Our leadership have been raising the issue. We, those of us who went for the implementation, have been raising the issue in the various commissions and committees, like, for example, GMEC, like, which is the highest organ that supervises the implementation of the peace agreement. Nothing is coming out. In other words, summarily, the international community is just looking on as things are developing into another level of conflict in South Sudan.
I've spoken to several stakeholders in this South Sudan peace process, especially the international community, saying it is the South Sudanese who will sit down and agree on how to move forward. Now, you are blaming the government of President Salva Kiir for what you're saying, they are not implementing the peace agreement. But the government is also saying your group, the SPLM-IO, is delaying. Up to today, your leader, Dr. Riek Machar, is not in Juba. He is supposed to be in Juba. He has been appointed the first vice president, and he's not there. He's in absentia. How can you blame the government?
the agreement that we are now actually going to implement, or we're implementing, if at all we are doing so, is not our making. It is an international conflict resolution mechanism that has been actually imposed on both parties to the conflict.
They imposed it on you because they imposed the agreement. Let me use your words. They imposed the agreement on you because you have been dragging your feet. Both of you have been dragging the process for 1 year, and people are suffering on the ground. People are dying. You are lucky to be in Nairobi, but there are people who have nothing to eat. You have taken your time when people are dying. That is why the international community imposed the agreement on you.
Yeah, they imposed the agreement on us. I concur with you in terms of the suffering of our people and the country, the destruction in which our state has reached now. I quite agree with you. Because what is happening in South Sudan is today is carnage. It's no longer a nation or anything called people responsible for their country and people, allowing the situation to drag on in this manner. But, okay, should the people who impose this agreement see that we are not doing it the way they do it, then why don't they use the leverage they have been actually applying on the both parties to sign the agreement? Why don't we go back to that?
The leader of the SPLM-IO was appointed by President Kiir as the first vice president in accordance to the agreement. Until today, he is not in Juba. He is not in the office. And you are blaming the government for not implementing the peace agreement. Is that fair?
Good, Tanda. First of all, there are mechanisms of the first vice president going to Juba. There are provisions or requirements that are supposed to take place before he moves in. One of these requirements are that Juba should be demilitarized, that forces should move 25 miles outside Juba, that his bodyguards or the bodyguards for the vice president is supposed to come in, and that there is provisions for joint police forces to be in place, and that finally he comes in. Are these in place?
But the international the international community offered, Troika countries offered to transport your troops. But you are saying your troops must come with all their weapons, the tanks, the artillery and everything, as if you're going to fight. You're going to Juba, your home country. Why should you carry heavy weapons with you?
What are you talking about when you're going into the crocodile's mouth or going into the lion's den and you should go raising up your hand? What's that? And you're talking about forces of the two parties. How can you ask one party who is actually the aggrieved to go empty-handed? Is that in the provision?
And so, with all this standoff, what is the status of this peace agreement? Do you believe that this peace agreement is alive?
I cannot preempt any negative thing, but to me, what is happening today in South Sudan is reneging on the peace agreement, and the international community is just turning a blind eye to it, because the carnage is happening in Greater Equatoria now, and Western Baragazar in particular, is beyond imagination. You cannot imagine in a place like Western Baragazal and Wau County in particular, villages are being burned down, food stuff is being looted or set on fire in the field. And the militias and the SPLA shoot to kill anybody seen. For example, a school director called Peter Belenge Umido Naruza was murdered on the 25th together with another woman, and they wounded a third woman.
That's Ofondi Ndima Fibel, SPLM-IO appointed member of parliament in the National Legislative Assembly. He was speaking with me from Nairobi earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at mental illness in Kenya. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you fear speaking in public?
Yes, I'm not so good with speaking in public. Yes, so I'm a little afraid of it. But once I start, I always get over the fear.
I don't think so. I enjoy speaking in public.
Not necessarily. I'm a good speaker, so I don't fear.
I fear I'm shy, so that is why I fear. Anytime I'm given the microphone to speak in public, I shake. So I don't like speaking in public.
I don't fear because I practice every Sunday. I happen to be a preacher anyway. So by the mere fact that I'm able to speak every Sunday at least in church, it's easier for me to speak in public.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Millions of Africans suffer from mental illness, but local superstition and ignorance can mean they remain undiagnosed and instead suffer mistreatment and abuse. Rael Obor reports for VOA from Ngong Town in Kenya's Kajiado County, where a local initiative is sending volunteers out to villages to teach people about psychiatric illness and identify those in need of care.
The team of health volunteers makes its round in Maasai villages in the northern part of Kenya. The volunteer asks, "Do you have any sick people here? People you think may be mad?" The resident says no, but they do have people who have been bewitched. There was one madman, locals say, but he died. The volunteers from the Reason to Hope program say this is a typical exchange. The Kenya Schizophrenia Foundation launched the program to raise awareness of mental illness. Hundreds of people suffering from mental illness walk into the foundation's offices in nearby town of Ngong every week seeking help. Program director Mary Wahome says local beliefs can be a danger for mental health sufferers.
We still believe that mental health is not a sickness, but something that can be dealt with in the community spirits, exorcism of demons and other things. So for us, our main work is to let them know that it is an illness, which if treated well and given early intervention, can be managed.
The Reason for Hope program works with rural health clinics and so far has reached over 30,000 mentally ill people in rural areas all over Kenya. 25-year-old Sheldon Moses was not diagnosed with bipolar disorder until after high school.
My mom is bipolar, by the way, and sometimes you think it's that curse from the ancestors, especially if you come from the western region, like I do come from. It's sometimes alluded to that stuff, but I think it's also ignorance.
Sheldon is covered under his parents' private health insurance. Otherwise, he couldn't afford the medicine that controls his symptoms. He says it costs about $30 a week.
It's seriously expensive, and I'm thinking if a policy can be put in on how to take care of these guys, the way HIV and AIDS has been taken care of, with ARVs being brought in by, is it USAID, that have chipped in and they've made it so much affordable to cut down. I know it's not as much disastrous as HIV is, but if a program like that can be done, it will really, really be helpful.
The Reason for Hope Awareness Program is mainly funded by members and well-wishers. The foundation does not have funds to cover regular treatment for all those in need. But Wahome says dispelling the myths and stigma that surround mental illness has made communities more proactive in caring for members who suffer from it.
When the communities are aware it's a lifetime support they need, the communities take over. We have places where the communities are very strong, where they are the one who go for their own people. They know that in such a family there's this person. They get them even for medication. They even assist in cleaning them. They assist in helping them. So we have seen the strength is through the communities.
Still, she says, effective treatment for psychiatric disorders do exist and the government should help provide to those in need. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Ngong, Kenya.
Still in Kenya, wildlife officials say a lion that escaped from the Nairobi National Park attacked a man on a busy road in the capital Nairobi today. This marks the third time in less than a month that lions have escaped from the zoo, causing panic among city residents. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
Kenya Wildlife Service Director of Communications Paula Duto says the fugitive lion clawed a 68-year-old man and that the behaviour of pedestrians and motorists was to blame.
A crowd that had formed around the lion had made noise. Motorists were hooting. People are taking videos for WhatsApp and other channels, and the lion had become agitated and aggressive and injured one old man.
A video being shared on social media does indeed show commuters hooting continuously on the busy highway and a locust peeking out from behind fences and gates. The national park sits on nearly 12,000 hectares of land In recent years, the ever-expanding capital, which now counts 5 million people, has threatened the Nairobi sanctuary. Park officials say animal escapes and sittings are not new, but just getting more attention. Officials say during the wet season, animals tend to roam outside the park limits. However, Wildlife Service spokesman Uduto says they will be investigating a pattern they have seen in recent months of animals heading into residential areas away from their usual routes.
It's a new pattern, particularly on the Mombasa Road and Langata Road sites, which are more heavily settled by people and industries. It's something we're investigating to see exactly what's causing this recurrence of the lions coming out on this other side.
In February, four lions spent a whole day wandering around different residential areas of the city, but no one was injured. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Scores of businesses run by Eritreans in Wau Town are closed today, while owners mourn the death of a colleague killed in his home this morning. An early investigation indicates Eritrean businessman Habtemariam Mariam was killed by robbers. Witnesses say Mariam was stabbed to death. They say four unidentified armed men with AK-47s entered a fence where the businessman was sleeping outside his house. The other Eritrean businessmen in the area say they are considering leaving South Sudan as a result. Ceasefire agreements in the greater Upper Nile area have largely held, but the ongoing violence in South Sudan causes great alarm. That, according to Ismail Abrajo Gaspar Martins of Angola, the United Nations Security Council president for the month of March. In his address to the UN Security Council in New York yesterday, Martin said the council calls upon the government of South Sudan to uphold its responsibility for protecting civilians. He said the council is particularly alarmed at credible reports describing armed men in SPLA uniforms entering a UN mission in South Sudan, protection of civilian site and firing on civilians, an act he says may constitute war crimes. And finally, traditional and religious leaders in South Sudan are calling on President Kiir and Vice President Designate and former rebel leader Riek Machar to stop delaying and start implementing the peace deal they signed 7 months ago. The leaders say civilians are still being killed, displaced from their villages and forced to go hungry because of the ongoing violence. More than 50 traditional and religious leaders who attended a three-day workshop in Juba say they want to see concrete steps taken towards implementing the peace agreement. The workshop was sponsored by the United States Agency for International Development to educate leaders on the terms of the deal. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with a gospel Congolese musician, Kalambai, with the song Malese.
Oh! En Jésus, nous avons le pouvoir sur toute la force de l'ennemi. Pas de négociation avec le diable, encore moins les démons.
Tangwe kokile lombe atelemi. Banguna nanga ino sobalati confusion. Posana bango isala kandenga ina limwa. Pisoli nanga isala kande petina bango. Batela kinga imitambo na nzela ponga na kwea
Melo machi baluki Azi transana ngambo na biso Anasika yolo anu la victoire Amatika na bango bakomi confondu Bakomi koguma na bango na bango Elonga ya biso
Kasina kobanga teo Nazala kananzambe Bando kibaye biango Baya kanabutu Bakuta kanga ibiempe teo.
We have been listening to Mikey Kalambai with his gospel hit Malase. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a safe and peaceful weekend. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.